Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Dan Harris, joined by Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at MikeTagliereNFL. Tags, I do a daily fantasy baseball show during the season called Leading Off. It's 15 minutes, first thing in the morning, and one of my favorite segments that I used to do was Why Everybody Gotta Be Injured, which I would do on a day where, as you might expect, a lot of players got injured, and it seems kind of appropriate today. I mean, Jacoby Brissett probably sprained his MCL. I don't know if we have definitive word yet. Adam Thielen and DeSean Jackson aggravated their hamstring and abdomen injuries, respectively. We even preemptively lost Sterling Shepard from tomorrow night's game because he's back in the concussion protocol. It was just a sad day, Tags.
It was a very sad day for a lot of these players, but fortunately, these are the players that I talk quite a bit about in the primer when I write it, and I say that anybody coming off a multi-week injury, like someone like DeSean Jackson, even Adam Thielen a little bit, I was a little hesitant with those players because they were... So Thielen was a soft tissue injury, and it's like those are ones that you can kind of say, are they pushing it? Like Thielen coming back so quickly, is he pushing it? And that, I mean, it's tough to sit Adam Thielen, let's be honest about that. But someone like DeSean Jackson, he should have been on benches. Sterling Shepard wasn't someone that was a recommended play. Jacoby Brissett, unfortunately, you cannot predict an MCL sprain, but at the same time, he also had a terrible matchup against Pittsburgh. So, I mean, some of the injuries that happened today, I don't think they would have impacted fantasy lineups as much as people might think.
Well, Thielen certainly did, and that's a big one. And for me, I would have started Thielen if I owned him anywhere. But when you have a soft tissue injury like that, and you're like a game time decision, right? And then you go out there. I mean, it's cold. You don't really know how it's going to react until you get started. I would always just wish that they would err on the side of extreme caution, which is once you feel 100% and once we feel confident that you're pretty much back to normal, we're going to give you one more week just to make sure you're okay, right? Because Thielen, I mean, everybody started Thielen as they should have, but he really crushed fantasy owners. And not as much, perhaps, as Stephon Diggs, who should have been the beneficiary of no Adam Thielen, but unfortunately was the exact opposite. But we'll get into all of that. Let's start us off here with your biggest winner.
Biggest winner, Devin Singletary. Last week it was something I was paying attention to this week. I wanted to see the snaps between the two because he did out-snap Frank Gore like 2-1 last week. And it was kind of like, all right, is this a thing or was it just like a one-game thing? Because I don't want to fall for that. But over the last 2 weeks, Frank Gore has played just 38 of a possible 121 snaps. He got a bunch of goal line carries today, and he was stuffed on every single one of them. He just doesn't look... I mean, he's slowly losing it. This should be expected at his advanced age. And Devin Singletary offers some bursts. He offers some big play potential. So moving forward, I mean, I'm confident saying that he's an RB3 at minimum with maybe RB2 potential.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, he had his touchdown last week, but this is really the breakout game, right? 20 for 95 on the ground plus 3 catches for 45 yards. Okay, so you had him at 37 in half PPR. Where are you moving him to now?
I have him up at 28 right now, and I'm still finessing stuff and kind of moving things around, but that's where I put him for the time being. That's what I'm saying. It's like RB3 territory. I feel confident in that.
Yeah, no, that's a strong move there. I mean, that's what I was wondering. When you say RB3, it could mean like you're like, oh, 33, 34, something like that. But to move him that high is a meaningful move. And I agree with you. I mean, it's a combined, the fact that Singletary looked great and also how bad Gore looked, exactly as you said. I mean, I believe, I'm sorry if you said this and I didn't exactly hear it, but I thought he had three straight goal line runs from the one and yep. couldn't convert. Is that what it was? Right. And Josh Allen then wound up sneaking in on fourth down, I believe. But yeah, both those swings are big. And again, this is a nice thing. You know, guys like Miles Sanders, for example, where fantasy owners have been holding on to these guys waiting for the eventual payoff. And it's not quite here with Sanders, which we'll get to in a little bit. But with Singletary, it certainly appears to be. How about your biggest loser?
Biggest loser is somebody, it's not even based on the performance that he had, but this is more of like biggest loser for the week, and it's DK Metcalf. The Seahawks picking up Josh Gordon off waivers is not very good for DK. DK had been leading this team in air yards. He still was actually coming into this week, but it was the gap was closing between him and Tyler Lockett. But still, it was almost like DK Metcalf was like a wide receiver three, kind of, but that, you know, he'd have some ups and downs, but you kind of had to live with that. And you were expecting on some touchdown regression towards the mean. But with Josh Gordon coming in, I know it's a new team and I know it's like, oh, he's got to develop chemistry. I mean, but let's not pretend that DK Metcalf is a complete NFL wide receiver at this point in time. He's not. He's still going to be in the starting lineup in three wide receiver sets, which they do run a lot. But he's going to become the number three wide receiver on this team behind Tyler Lockett and Josh Gordon. So DK Metcalf's the biggest loser for me this week.
Yeah, that's interesting. He obviously had a pretty big day today. We were just talking about it right before we started recording that he had caught the 53-yard touchdown pass. He has six targets, three catches for 70 yards. As we record, this game's not over, so it might be more. So that's interesting. You know, Tags, the thing with Gordon is, I mean, look, he was familiar already with the Patriots offense, and he was not having a good year. Were you willing to just basically write all that off to the fact that he was just battling through all these nagging injuries and things like that, and that you think, if healthy, he's going to have a big role? Or is it purely about the fact that when he comes in, he's going to siphon targets regardless of how effective he is?
I just think he is going to siphon targets. There's not many targets to go around, and that's the biggest concern, right, is that we have to rely on these receivers in Seattle to be extremely efficient with their targets. And if you're third in line on a team that's throwing the ball fewer than 30 times per game most of the time, that's concerning. You know, Jacob Hollister, I talked about him last week, and saying that he was like a deep waiver wire ad. It was so funny. People were like, what are you talking about? And Hollister, like, I feel like he could be the tight end in Seattle. And it's like Disley, nobody wanted to believe that was a real thing, but he was someone that you could start. So it's just like all of a sudden there's a lot of options. Chris Carson's obviously involved in the passing game. Lockett and Gordon are going to get their targets. You don't claim Josh Gordon to sit him on the bench. Again, he's a complete wide receiver. He may not be the player that he once was. I don't think he is. But if you watch the targets that he did get with the Patriots this year, he's still a player. He's still an above average NFL wide receiver. Whereas DK is like, he's, I don't want to say a one trick pony, but he's kind of that who's living off the efficiency of Russell Wilson right now.
Yeah, well, you can make quite a living off that efficiency, because Wilson, again, is having another game where he's playing out of his mind, which we will talk about as we get into it. But first, we have to move to What's Your Problem, Man, my favorite segment, which, Tags, you always take in good fun. Look, your hatred, Tags, of Matthew Stafford from a fantasy standpoint is legendary at this point, mainly because I've paid to fly a banner over every Lions game that says Mike Tagliere hates your quarterback. But what is your problem with Kenny Galladay, man? I mean, he is the eighth ranked wide receiver on the season in half PPR leagues coming in. He had another big day today, seven targets, four catches, 132 yards, and a touchdown. Yet you have him 17th in your rest of season rankings in half PPR behind Odell Beckham. Explain yourself to the American people. Also, P.S., I will point out, you're way too low on Marvin Jones. Also, you have him 38th in your rest of season rankings. I have him 27th. Don't let your Bears hatred get in the way, man.
I don't. Well, I have Galladay at 14 now, so I moved him up a little bit. But still, looking at the rest of season schedule, this is where at the point in the season where I try and look at that stuff a little bit to separate players. And after this game against the Raiders, he's going to have the Bears. He's going to have the Cowboys. Neither of our great matchups. Then he has Washington, good matchup. And then the Bears again, and then Minnesota. He has Denver in the fantasy championship in week 16. That means he's going to get shadowed by Chris Harris Jr., which sucks. He has shadowed the best wide receivers in the game, and he's been like lights out.
I'm not gonna take issue with that whatsoever. But are these other matchups really something to be scared of? I mean, Tex, Are your Bears a matchup to fear for opposing passing games?
Hold on a second. They're not a matchup to fear anymore, but they're still not allowing a lot of production to wide receivers. The receivers they're allowing production to this year are like technicians, like route running technicians. And I don't know if I consider Galladay that. He's more of like that contested catch wide receiver. So, I mean, I don't think he's not going to be somebody that you're going to say, oh, you have to bench. But it's like when deciding between Galladay and someone like Julian Edelman or Odell Beckham, his schedule is going to lighten up a bit. Like he has the Bills next week, but after that, the schedule lightens up for him. We knew that he was going to have a terrible 2 weeks. Like he was going against Stephon Gilmore and Chris Harris Jr. Those are probably two of the best cornerbacks in the NFL right now, two of the best three cornerbacks in the league. So we knew that those were going to be down weeks. I can't put Galladay above guys like Tyler Lockett, above guys like Mike Evans. So I feel like Galladay's there. I'm not down on him. I'm not high on him. I'm whatever. And Marvin Jones he's the wide receiver 36 in my rankings now, is someone that has been too up and down in his production for me to rely on him consistently. Like he's had, I think, four games under 55 yards or 60 yards, something like that. His targets have gone a little up and down. I want to say there's only one game this year with more than six targets. So it's almost like following the opportunity. I know Stafford is good, and I actually moved him up last week in the rankings. We talked about that. But it's more about, like, when it comes to wide receivers, I want consistency. And I don't think that Marvin Jones is the most consistent wide receiver in fantasy. Looking, you know, it through his game logs, you can kind of see that. Even coming into this game, two of his last three games, he had fewer than 25 yards.
Yeah, no, of course. And I'm not going to go crazy over Marvin Jones because, as you and I talk about all the time, once you get to that spot in the rankings, nobody is consistent, really. In the end, you're kind of, you know, you're picking and choosing, and there's not that big of a difference between, let's say, high 20s and mid 30s or something like that. But, you know, with Galladay, I don't know, I have a little more faith in him. I agree, especially than Beckham, who, you know, I had him as a, you know, my buy low in one of the articles that we did for this week. But still, I get that the schedule is tough, but there's been nothing this entire season that has shown you anything to suggest that Beckham is going to be able to make it work in this offense. No doubting the talent, but essentially the offense. Let's move on to what's your problem man number two, which is not nearly as fun, but I still, you know, sometimes tags, I gotta go deep to find some of these. So I am not proud of this one because I probably had him way too high at 13th rest of season in half PPR rankings. But Darren Fells was your 27th ranked tight end rest of season in half PPR. He scores another TD today. I don't care about the fact that he like dropped two passes or that he only had 1 yard or that Jordan Akins had three targets as well. I mean, he's got six touchdowns on the season tags. Like, we don't even talk about him at all in like maybe the streaming conversation or anything like that.
Bobby brought him up on the podcast this week, and I was like, no, dude, no.
That is the reason why I'm bringing him up here, because I know Bobby already got on you about this.
Well, he caught one ball. I don't care if it was a touchdown. I'm not chasing touchdowns. I refuse to do that. He's sharing a workload. He sees, like, he's legitimately seen one or two targets now in, I think, five of his last eight games. So it's like, I'm not relying on that type of production. I'm not going to bet on touchdowns. There's regression there. It's the same reason that I was buying Zach Ertz. I was following the targets. I told people to buy him last week. I played him in DFS this week. It's a tight end position. You follow the targets. You follow the consistency in targets and let everything else play out. And he's not getting consistent targets. He's not the number one tight end on it. Well, he wasn't this week in terms of like target share, but he's splitting routes run with Jordan Akins. Dude, there's so much to unpack with this Texans team. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, we have Duke Johnson, he had a much bigger role today. That was, like, obviously a big... I could have said he was the biggest winner, but I don't know what it means going forward. Kenny Stills, Will Fuller's going to come back into the lineup. They have Kenny Stills, who's getting, obviously, plenty of work. Kiki QT hasn't played a single snap in the last 2 weeks. Like, what the hell is going on with this team? And yet, Darren Fells has one catch.
Three targets. He dropped the other two tags. I mean, get with it. I mean,
that's going to get him more work going forward.
You stick with your OJ Howard, okay? I'm going to go ahead and roll with Darren Fells every single day in like my league that starts four
times. That's just rude. That's rude.
Yeah, I know. It is. Everything is rude. Everything I'm doing is bad. But anyway, all right. Look, we're going to get into the games here. But before we do... Look, guys, talking about erectile dysfunction is not easy. Usually we brush it off with, I'm, you know, probably exhausted or stressed out with work or something like that. Or we hide behind excuses like women weaken legs or whatever they said in Rocky. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, it's safe, and it's totally discreet, which is really everything you want when it comes to dealing with ED. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. The doctor is going to work with you to find the best treatment plan. And if medication is appropriate, Roman's going to ship it to you for free with free two-day shipping. As I said, the entire process is straightforward, simple, and discreet, as is getting started with it. Just go to GetRoman.com/FantasyPros and complete an online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/FantasyPros for your free visit to get started. All right, Tags, as always, let's start with the Thursday game here because there's actually a lot to unpack. 49ers 28, Cardinals 25. Jimmy Garoppolo throws four touchdown passes, one to Emmanuel Sanders, who had seven for 112, one to George Kittle, who fought through a knee injury to have a good game, then one to Dante Pettis and one to Kendrick Bourne. But let's focus on the run game here. We've been excited about Tevin Coleman lately, especially after his four touchdown game against the Panthers. And you talked how high you were moving him in your rest of season rankings in last week's podcast, but he's a huge disappointment here. Just 12 for 23 on the ground, 2 for 13 through the air. He was outperformed by Matt Breida, 15 for 78 on the ground, plus two catches for 14 yards through the air. Do you have any concerns here about Coleman laying a dud in the soft matchup and being outperformed by Breida?
I don't want to say that. I mean, I'm definitely going back to, I'm having like these flashbacks of how I used to feel about Tevin Coleman, even when the year started. I remember I'm in like a two quarterback format in one league, and I had Andy Dalton and Trubisky as my number two. Like, so someone offered me basically Tevin Coleman for my number two quarterback, and I debated it, and I was like, I don't really like Coleman very much. And it's like, it came back to bite me as the year went on, obviously, because this was before they even played a game. But this is Tevin Coleman, and this is driving me insane, because like after watching him the prior week and then knowing that Matt Breida was supposed to miss this game, that Jeff Wilson was seemingly hurt, and it was like there were so many things going right for Tevin Coleman. It's like, okay, 20 touches, here we go. And the consensus on him, like I was wondering if I was too high, because I think I had him ranked as like the number 12 running back this week, and the consensus was even higher. I think they had him at like number 9. So It was a difficult matchup to predict. Nobody could have predicted what happened. I think Matt Breida looked better than him, and I think that's going back. I think Raheem Mostert has looked just as good as any running back in this backfield when he gets touches. So it's like Tevin Coleman might be the third best running back on this team, but he's the one that gets consistent touches, and we've seen Shanahan give him 20 touches in a couple games. So I'm not too concerned, but...
Did you drop him at all, Tex? Did you drop him in your rest of season rankings? You had him 13th coming in.
Yeah, I believe I did. I think I dropped him to like 16 or something like that. So I dropped him a little bit. Nothing too crazy, just because obviously there's... Melvin Gordon's a guy who surpassed him. So he's a guy that moved up in the rankings. Josh Jacobs moved up and Tevin Coleman moved down.
Yep, I think that's all fair. I mean, you still have him as a strong RB2. And again, there were a couple of things here. He could have had a much bigger game. He had that touchdown wiped out by the holding call. He dropped that very easy screen pass that probably would have been a huge play. Plus, remember that the 49ers are getting healthier here. I mean, Kyle Juszczyk, Joe Staley, they may be back by next week. My only concern is that, again, on that fourth and goal at the end of the half, Jeff Wilson was in on that one. And, you know, that's kind of what I worry about a little bit, whether or not they do this thing where Jeff Wilson is our hammer and he's going to come in on the short yardage. But again, Coleman had a touchdown that was wiped out. So for me, look, I think, unfortunately, he's just not at that point where you can feel pretty confident that you're going to have a good game pretty much every time out, like a Chris Carson type. Like, he's below that threshold necessarily, but I do still think that in the end, where you have him is about right. That's where I had him coming in. That's probably about where I'll have him.
Let me ask you a question. Who would you rather have the rest of the season, Tevin Coleman or David Johnson?
Well, it's a little difficult because we don't know the extent of injury, but assuming he comes back next week, that's about the range, right? But you know what? I think probably Johnson is my guess when I'm done, you know, doing my rest of season ranks, as I will probably starting tomorrow into Tuesday. But let's talk about that, okay? Because, you know, again, the Cardinals put up a fight here and Kyler Murray, you know, holds it together, considering Andy Isabella has that one long touchdown that he basically catch and run. But let's talk about that run game here, okay? Kenyon Drake joins the team like 5 minutes before the game, 15 carries for 110 yards and a score, plus four catches for 52 yards. Now, let's assume David Johnson is back next week. How do you feel about that backfield going forward?
I see it as a timeshare. I don't think that you give up a draft pick for Kenyon Drake if you don't intend to utilize him in that backfield. And we even saw it with David Johnson, you know, when he was active the last couple games, they utilized Chase Edmonds a bit more, knowing that Drake looked as good as he did. I mean, this is seemingly another timeshare. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's a 50-50 timeshare. I don't think that's the case. But I think there's real questions about David Johnson's health in general. I don't know if a back injury just gets better because you rested for a couple weeks. You know what I mean? Like, there's another injury on top of the back. I don't know, man. I think there's a possibility that David Johnson doesn't play again this year. So that I would take Tevin Coleman just because of the uncertainty. But when David Johnson does return, I will say that I'm going to have him in RB2 range, even if he returned this coming week. They have a tough matchup against it's Tampa Bay this coming week, and then they're going to be playing against the 49ers again, and then they have their bye week. So, yeah, David Johnson's not someone that I feel like is necessary to view as an RB1 anymore.
No, I completely agree. I mean, we had him roughly around the same spot. You had him, I believe, 14th. I had him 16th. And again, a lot of that is injury since we don't really know what's going to happen. When he does come back, though, my guess is I will probably, assuming he comes back next week, as they are saying that he would, I'll probably still have him ahead of Coleman. But that's the range, right? It's going to be a spot or two because they're both going to be in these situations. So again, that is just something to monitor. But that's around where they're going to be. And Drake certainly, I mean, with how good he looked, you not only say, Miami, what have you been doing for the last 2 years, but you also obviously realize that he is going to have a role in this offense going forward, just given how good he looked. Let's move on here to today's game in the London. Texans 26, Jaguars 3. This probably marks the end of Minshew mania, but we'll get to that in a second. Pretty dominant game all around from the Texans. Deshaun Watson throws for 2 touchdowns, 1 to Darren Fells, of course, greatest tight end of all time. 1 a late one to DeAndre Hopkins, who finishes with 11 targets, 8 catches, just 48 yards, and that score. But let's talk about the running game because you alluded to it earlier. Carlos Hyde has 19 carries for 160 yards. He does lose the fumble at the very end of a really long run where he almost scored a touchdown, and he doesn't get involved in the passing game at all, where Duke Johnson was very involved. 5 targets, 5 catches for 68 yards. But Hyde, you're talking about Duke Johnson. Hyde now has at least 19 touches in 4 of his last 5 games, at least 83 yards or a touchdown in 4 of his last 5 games. So tell me about this backfield then, Tags. You wanted to talk about it earlier. What do you think? Duke Johnson, you think, is the big winner here?
Yes, I would say he's definitely a big winner. But unfortunately, it's difficult to talk about it going forward. Like, we have the bye week here, and then coming out of the bye, they're going to play at Baltimore. They're going to play the Colts. Then they're going to play the Patriots. None of those teams allow much on the ground at all. So, Carlos Hyde is not someone, he's not someone I'm very high on moving forward. Even in the championship week, week 16, he's playing at Tampa Bay. Not a good matchup. So Hyde I have down as the RB29 right now. I would rather have Devin Singletary moving forward.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with that. I mean, I'm a little higher. I am, at least coming into this, I had him 25th. It was somewhere around there. But do you think at least that this is going to be kind of what we're going to see at this point, that Hyde's going to continue to amass roughly 20 carries per game, nothing in the passing game, and that Johnson is going to continue to carve out this role in the passing game, which is what, everybody kind of thought coming in, given his time with Cleveland and whatever they've got going on there in the passing game? So that's how you see this going forward, about kind of what we saw today with less effectiveness, of course, from Hyde on the ground. But that's about what you think we're going to see?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the only 3 games, including this one, but coming into this game, the only 2 games that Hyde had double digit half PPR points were against Atlanta and Kansas City. I mean, you'd better have it against them. I mean, I just feel like he's one of those very low upside RB3s. He's kind of like Adrian Peterson in a better offense. That's it.
When you get as many touches as he do with him, I've always feel like I'm a little higher than Hyde is on the industry, but I really can't argue with the fact that he gets absolutely nothing in the passing game, which limits his upside. On the other side of the ball, a rough game for everyone other than Keelan Cole, who totals 80 yards on 5 catches. Leonard Fournette does his usual stuff where he saves his day with involvement in the passing game. Who starts a quarterback in week 11 for the Jaguars against the Colts, and does it matter to this offense at all?
It does matter. I would prefer to see Minshew. I don't trust Nick Foles at all. Honestly, Minshew had a terrible game. Like, let's just be real about it. It was a flat out awful game, and there's nothing that you can say or do that's going to change that. Like, he miserable, absolutely miserable. But we can't let it erase what he's done this entire season. The team is 4-5. They're not out of the playoff race. But if you go back to Foles after what he's done, like out of nowhere, I think you have to see a couple bad games in a row in order to bench him. I know it's the bye week and there's a chance for them to do that, but me personally, if I'm coaching that team, I do not take the job away from Gardner Minshew. I don't think Nick Foles has proven enough. Like, I didn't like the signing when they signed. If you were to ask me going forward, which quarterback would you rather have for your team's future? I'd say I'd rather have Minshew.
I don't think that is necessarily a crazy take. I kind of feel like they're going to Foles, though. And I think they want to go to Foles, honestly. I mean, I think that Minshew has played very well for much of the season. I think deep down, because of what they gave up, in the end to get Foles, and because they kind of committed to him as a starter, I think they at least want him to be the starter. And I think that this is going to be their excuse to do it. So you think, though, that it's a downgrade for what, everybody in the offense? Let's assume it's Foles for a second. You think it's a downgrade to everybody in the offense if it's Foles?
I don't want to say it's not a massive downgrade to the point where I'm saying you can't start DJ Chark, even though he hasn't done much. I would say it's to the point where it's like you don't want to trust Chris Conley. I didn't want to trust Chris Conley anyways, but I think it would be an upgrade for maybe someone like Dede Westbrook, because Foles is more of a check down type player. He doesn't have a big arm to get the ball down the field. So probably an upgrade to someone like Dede Westbrook, but I don't know. I really just don't even want to put the thought into Minshew getting benched, like considering what he's done to this point. Again, terrible game. There's nothing I can say about it, but I don't think he should lose this job.
All right. Well, I think he is going to lose the job, so we may have to talk about it, but I could be wrong, of course. But I agree, the big difference, I think, with Foles would be that Dede Westbrook, assuming he's healthy, obviously missed this game, that it's going to be a boon to him, because you saw it in the preseason. We talked about it in the preseason episode that I was high on him. I thought he fit well with what Foles wants to do. So I think he would become a little bit more reliable, assuming that Foles took over. Let's move on to Eagles 22, Bears 14. All right, Tags. Let's start with the Eagles. They controlled this one pretty much from the get-go, and you had DeSean Jackson, who I believe left after one possession, after, you know, missing most of the season so far with an abdomen injury. I don't know how bad, it's an aggravation of it, but it's obviously not good. Carson Wentz was fine, throwing for 239 yards and a touchdown to Zach Ertz, who sees a massive 11 targets, 9 catches, and 103 yards. So again, you mentioned it earlier, we talked about Ertz a lot. The trade deadline has now passed. Is this a sign of things to come now, Tags, or is this just a one-off?
I feel like it was always a sign of things to come, though, with him. Like, so he was like one of those guys that I put in the buy column because I was just like, everything about the vitals is good with him. Like, everything was good. And I think he's also someone that benefits from DeSean Jackson coming back to the offense. It just clears out things for him underneath, over the middle of the field. And if you look at it, even like Ertz, when Alshon Jeffrey, like, forget about DeSean Jackson, but go over the last 2 years with Alshon Jeffrey, when Jeffrey's been in the lineup, Ertz actually performs better. He's a lot more efficient on the targets. He might get more targets when Jeffrey's out, but he's been much more efficient when he's on the field. I felt like Ertz was one of the better buy lows in all fantasy football, and it kind of worked out today. I mean, it was a tough matchup against the Bears. The Bears had allowed just one tight end to top 50 yards against them over the last, like, since the start of 2018 season. There was only one tight end. It was George Kittle, who topped 52 yards against them, I think was the number, and it took him 12 targets to get there. So Zach Ertz to wind up with 103 yards and a touchdown. Fantastic, fantastic job. But again, follow the targets at tight end. That's like my biggest line of advice. Just follow the targets.
As for the running game here, Jordan Howard continues to carry the load with 19 for 82 and a touchdown on the ground. Meanwhile, Miles Sanders, 73 yards, all-purpose essentially, on 13 touches. Tags, once again, I basically ask it every week. I'll ask it again. Who are you taking if you could only have one of the running backs for the rest of the season?
It's got to be Jordan Howard. This team should be set up in the passing game a bit more if DeSean Jackson can make it back into the lineup. I don't think they're needy for a whole lot of pass catchers, and that's Miles Sanders. They got Darren Sproles back today, who could eat into some of that receiving production that Miles Sanders has been getting. They clearly favor Jordan Howard on the goal line. So I'll say Jordan Howard, even though it's not exciting to say that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, and he's run well. I mean, I want to give him his due. He has run well. He's not as explosive as Sanders, but he's done exactly what they've needed him to do. And I think at this point, you know, as much as I like Sanders and I was excited about him this season, I think if you had to choose one, I agree it would be Howard. Let's move on to your boys, Tags. One of the worst first halves of offensive football that I've ever seen, and I've been a Jets fan my entire life. Just 9 yards, I believe, if I read that right, in the first half?
Yep, that's about right.
All right, 3 and out on their first 5 possessions. They got going a bit in the second half. Dave Montgomery winds up with 76 total yards and 2 touchdowns, but, you know, Mitchell Trubisky, again, not good. Throws for just 125 yards, 69 of which go to Taylor Gabriel, 53 of them on one play. Anthony Miller shut out. Allen Robinson, just one catch for 6 yards on 5 targets. Just, Tags, go ahead. What are your reactions to this game?
Bad. It's all bad. David Montgomery is a solid buy low, and he's coming off a 2-touchdown game. How could that be a buy low? It actually is a buy low, because his owners might be sitting there thinking, I want no part of this offense, get me out of it. But ever since Matt Nagy said he wanted to run the ball more, I think Montgomery now has, I think, 48 touches over the last 2 games. So he's clearly going to be featured in this offense. You have to hide Trubisky as much as possible. He looks awful. He's falling off to his side now, which is like this weird thing that he's doing that I don't know what it is. I can't explain it, but this offense is dreadful to watch. The play calling hasn't been particularly good. Taylor Gabriel should have had a touchdown on that 53-yard catch, but for whatever reason, he turned back to the inside of the field. It was weird, but it's just a bad team. Allen Robinson didn't even have a good game. There was a long completion that he should have had where he didn't get both feet down in bounds like he should have. So, it's a team effort here that was terrible. It's not just Mitch. It's everybody on the team. And Tariq Cohen, couple drops, terrible. All bad.
Yeah, it was not good. It was not a good day. And again, coming from a Jets fan who also had a terrible day, but yeah, I agree. And so no concerns about Allen Robinson just generally going forward. I mean, he could, Allen Robinson's played wonderfully this entire year. He could do much more if he had a better offense, but you know, just because it's one bad game, I assume wherever you had Robinson coming in, you're not really moving him off that, right?
He's actually someone I flip-flop with Kenny Golladay, so he moved down a spot or two, but yeah, he's right there in that. He's a solid wide receiver too. He had a bad week. You have to live with that, but he's been a guy that's been getting consistent targets and honestly posting good results with bad quarterback play. So, I mean, I was kind of thinking it can only get better, right? Unfortunately,
I'm not going to argue with flipping Golladay with him at all. And I agree. I'm not all that concerned with Robinson. Well, if you started Mitch Trubisky, you probably did not have a very good Sunday, but you started David Montgomery, maybe perhaps in your FanDuel lineup, you probably had a pretty good day. We all love our seasonal leagues, although Tags and I were just bemoaning how many we are in right before we started recording this. And again, part of that is because we really love playing DFS, and particularly on FanDuel. We can get our guys who we feel really strongly about that week, even if we don't have any shares of him otherwise. We don't need to worry about the many injuries that occur that can derail a season-long league, or when you draft a bust or anything like that. It is a new team each week with none of the hassles of season-long fantasy. I'm going to be playing tomorrow night without question, even though I have no shares of anybody in the game in my season-long leagues. Look, with Sterling Shepard out, we mentioned it earlier, I'm certainly going to have some shares of Golden Tate and Darius Slayton, who are both going to see a big boost in targets. And with the two big running backs going, you're surely going to see plenty of points. That's because there are more ways to win than ever this season on FanDuel, because they offer cash prizes and once-in-a-lifetime experiences during every single game, every single week. And now FanDuel is offering a great promotion to new users. You can get $20 in site credits when you deposit $20 or more. To get this great offer, just go to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros or download the FanDuel app. That's FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. All right, Tags, let's move on here. Chiefs 26, Vikings 23, a very entertaining game. We talked already about the Adam Thielen injury, and there's no word on the severity, but I mean, when you come in with a tissue injury like that and you aggravate it, I can't see any scenario where he plays next week or anything like that. And my guess is they may take it really slow and they've got a week 12 bye. But, you know, we're talking about the Vikings here, even though they lost. Stephon Diggs really, you know, he was coming off this historic three-game stretch, one catch on four targets for 4 yards plus one running for 12 yards here. Let's assume Thielen is down for the next few games. They've got matchups against Dallas and Denver. Does this game scare you at all with Diggs? Just one of those games or what?
He was someone that I was actually selling. When I talk about the buy sell and stuff, we have an article that comes out and he was in one of my sells. I just feel like this team is too run heavy to produce two fantasy relevant wide receivers on a consistent basis. And you're going to see some ups and downs with Diggs and Thielen. But if Thielen's out of the lineup for an extended period of time, you're going to start Diggs as like a wide receiver one. He should have 7-8 targets in those games minimum, with potential for more. He's been efficient when he's gone, when they throw to him. This was actually a tougher matchup than people think. Kansas City, people just assume that it's such a great matchup. It hasn't necessarily been a great matchup. So, I mean, while you're obviously playing Diggs, it wasn't like a smash spot for him or anything like that. But to walk away with four targets, even when Cousins threw the ball 38 times, is far from ideal. I mean, Laquon Treadwell had more targets than he did in this game. So there'll be better days for Diggs. Unfortunately, your window to sell high on him is unfortunately closed.
Yeah, and I mean, again, at the very least, you have to think Thielen's going to miss at least a game or two here, which, again, would be one reason why it's perfectly fine to hold Diggs. If you couldn't sell high on him anymore. And again, you know, the one thing with the Chiefs is, in the second half, at least, they started blitzing more, which is what they did, you know, a couple of games ago where their defense started to look better. And I think that that's kind of what they do. And they're much more effective that way. So the defense is certainly not quite as bad as, you know, fantasy owners have kind of been thinking, I think, all year. As for their offense, Matt Moore, perhaps in his last game as a starter, acquits himself well, throwing for 275 yards and a touchdown to Tyreek Hill, who goes for 140 yards overall. But again, Let's talk about the running game here. LeSean McCoy fumbled late last week against the Packers, and it was all Damien Williams thereafter, and that carried over to this game. McCoy touched the ball just 4 times, gaining 10 yards, while Williams rushed 12 times for 125 yards and a score, most of it on his 91-yard touchdown run. He also had 2 catches. So is this Damien Williams' job now, or is LeSean McCoy going to lead the Chiefs' backfield in carries next week?
This is so frustrating. I mean, like, and like being as transparent as I can, it's that Damien Williams, if you take away the one carry of 91-yard touchdown, and I'm not the type that likes to do that, but we have to look at it and say, outside of that, he had 11 carries for 34 yards. It wasn't a very good game outside of that. I mean, he caught 2 balls for 3 yards. This has been a backfield. It's so weird because under Andy Reid, we have continually seen like RB1 performances, right? Like nonstop RB1, RB1. You just plug and play whoever's the RB1. But he told us this year coming into the season, he said, this is going to be a timeshare, guys. It's not going to be that one man like workhorse role that we've been seeing in the years past. And he wasn't lying about it. We haven't seen much value come out of this backfield. Even if we were guaranteed the same exact workload, we can't say that Damien Williams is a must play with 12 carries a week and like 2 targets. I'm so like taken back by this backfield, like to know that Andy Reid continually produced, you know, top tier running backs. I don't feel that way about this backfield. I mean, Damien Williams to me is a high end RB3 with some upside, but that one that can lose the job at any point. So I feel absolutely zero confidence with him at all.
But if you're forced to take one back in Kansas City, it is now Williams over McCoy. Is that fair?
Correct. And it's not. I say that with it.
I feel like we're just going to flip them every week, man. You and I are going to, we basically have both of them exactly the same in our rest of season rankings pretty much every single week. And I think it's just going to be something where we're going to have to reevaluate it each and every week. But either way, we're never going to feel confident starting either one of them for the exact reasons that you've laid out. Let's move on to Bills 24, Redskins 9. We have talked already about Devin Singletary. I don't think there's too much else to take away here from the Bills. I mean, Josh Allen, just 160 yards passing. He does throw for a touchdown pass to Cole Beasley. He also runs for one. John Brown, 4 catches on 7 targets for 76 yards. Other than the running back situation, which we've broken down already, anything to take away here from the Bills side?
Not really. Outside of Devin Singletary, we talked about a whole lot. But there's not going to be, like, knowing this team doesn't want to, and they play good defense, they don't want to throw the ball a ton. And when that happens, it's like you're not going to have very consistent fantasy options. Cole Beasley has been relatively, if you look at the fantasy totals that he's posted, he's been very consistent. There's been just one game this year where he's had fewer than 9 PPR points. But then you see the stat lines and you're like, 2 catches for 13 yards, that's terrible. But that's what's going to happen when you throw the ball 20 times. John Brown's the only one that I think you could play with consistency of the pass catchers. But Devin Singletary, again, this was kind of his breakout. And we were kind of waiting for it to happen. And Frank Gore was playing so efficient earlier in the year. It's like it was going to be hard to see them take that role away. And I still think he's going to have a role. But Devin Singletary, I would feel confident saying he's going to net 15 plus touches per week going forward. And again, that has RB3 or better potential.
Yep, no, I agree with you there. Let's move on to the Redskins here. Dwayne Haskins certainly improved, 15 of 22 for 144 yards. But Terry McLaurin, 6 targets, 4 catches for 39 yards. It was a tough matchup. But can you start him in your lineup so long as Haskins is the quarterback? Again, we don't know. The last we heard that Case Keenum is going to be the starter, that was before this game. When healthy, he was still in the concussion protocol. They've got a bye next week. They've got the Jets after that. If Haskins is still the starter, can you start McLaurin as a wide receiver 3?
Coming back from his bye, I don't think they're going to go back to Haskins. Like, they obviously clearly didn't want him to throw the ball a lot in this game. So I expect Keenum to be back under center, and McLaurin, he remains in the wide receiver 3 conversation, but you have to understand that under Bill Callahan, since he took over as the interim head coach, this team wants to run the ball a lot, and they're going to get Darius Geis back in week 11. So, McLaurin for me right now, I have him as the wide receiver 32, and I don't feel even great about that.
Yeah, I think he's fine, and you can start him relatively confidently as a wide receiver 3 at worst, assuming that Case Keenum is there. But I think if Haskins is there, I think you got to keep him out of your lineup. And again, like we said, we don't really know what's going to happen after the bye, whether or not they're going to turn it back to Case Keenum, assuming that he clears concussion protocol. So for now, he's certainly up in the air. But yeah, with the running game, I mean, Peterson, again, 18 carries, 108 yards, although the vast majority of that was in the first half. But Darius Geis will be back, so we'll have to see how that backfield breaks down. Let's move on here to the Steelers 26, Colts 24. We already talked about Jacoby Brissett leaving the game. It sounds like he's probably going to miss at least a couple of weeks if he has a sprained MCL, but you'll probably know more by the time you listen to this. Brian Hoyer, though, he plays extremely well in his stead. 17 for 26, 168 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Marlon Mack runs for 89 yards on 21 carries. But let's talk receivers here. Hoyer throws a touchdown pass to Jack Doyle, Chester Rogers, and Zach Pascal. He sees 6 targets, 5 catches, 76 yards with a score, plus 27 yards rushing. We know T.Y. Hilton is probably out at least another 2 weeks. I mean, at least from the estimate. They've got Miami, Jacksonville, and Houston on tap. What are your thoughts on Zach Pascal?
I believe he offers some value here. I mean, looking at this matchup, I did not like him this week. Pittsburgh is a team that ever since they acquired Minkah Fitzpatrick, so you basically have to take away the first 2 games against the Patriots and the Seahawks. But ever since the start of week 3, so we're talking week 3 all the way up until this week, they had not allowed a wide receiver more than 12.2 PPR points. It was not a good matchup for wide receivers, and it was like, Pascal, I know that he's going to walk into the starting lineup, or I mean, he was already in the starting lineup, but he's going to have a higher target floor with T.Y. Hilton out of the lineup. And if you were to tell me that Zach Pascal was going to get 6 targets, I would have been like, he's still a wide receiver 5. But he turned those 6 targets into 5 catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. So it's mighty impressive of him. Brian Hoyer might target the wide receivers a little bit more than maybe Jacoby Brissett did, because outside of T.Y. Hilton, I want to say that no Colts wide receiver has surpassed 7 targets this year. And whenever you have, you know, that target ceiling, it's really tough to play anybody with confidence. But again, knowing that we have 6 teams on bye next week, Zach Pascal is going to be a very, very popular waiver wire ad. And I can't say that I blame anyone.
Yeah, I agree. It you know, Pascal is a really interesting sort of guy with Hilton out. I was really hoping to see something in this game, which again was a tough matchup, but the fact that he did really leads him to somebody I know you and Bobby are going to talk about him certainly going forward, at least tomorrow on the Waiver Wire show. Now, I had to run out for about 10 minutes today, Tags, and I had this game on the radio, and the Colts announcers legitimately said, and there's a dump off to Jalen Samuels. They literally throw the ball to him on every play. I don't understand why the Colts aren't guarding him. That was legitimately the words that came out. They called them "we," which again is my pet peeve with announcers, but still, that's what the Colts announcers were saying. He rushes for just 10 yards, but he catches all 13 of his targets for 73 yards, kind of what he does. Meanwhile, Trey Edmonds runs for a career high 73 yards on 12 carries. Nothing good in the passing game. Vance McDonald catches the touchdown pass. James Washington goes for 69 yards. Deontay Johnson, though, just 1 catch for 3 yards. Juju Smith-Schuster, just 3 catches for 16 yards. So you got the running backs, the lack of a passing attack. The world's your oyster, Tags. What do you want to say?
Jalen Samuels, it was a recurring theme this morning, actually, in the live stream where I told people, I'm like, start with Jalen Samuels. I put him as my RB 15 for the week. And I was like, especially in PPR formats, I said, he's just going to rack up the receptions. The Colts don't allow much on the ground, but he's going to rack up those receptions. I did not think he would catch 13 of 13 passes for 73 yards. This is Mason Rudolph at his finest. By the way, this is classic Mason Rudolph. He was bad again in this game, and it's affecting everybody. Juju Smith-Schuster ends the game with just 3 catches for 16 yards. It's awful, man. And Mike Tomlin actually kind of put the hammer down a little bit on him. He said that they're like, what can you do to change the play calling, blah blah. He's like, we need Rudolph to start the game better. He's like, there's not much else we can do. He just needs to basically wake up. They're not going to bench him right now.
They don't really have other options, though. I mean, they're not going to start Devlin Hodges, you know, going forward.
Devlin Hodges. No, he was bad.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask Bobby, he's the best quarterback that's ever been. So.
I mean, if they can get Jared Goff right now, Bobby would turn that down.
Yeah, no, of course. it was.
Now we're having fun. We love you, Bobby.
We do love Bobby. He's not listening to this anyway. Samuels was really, I mean, he was wide open. Every single play, it was.
Well, it's that zone coverage that they run. The Colts run a heavy zone. But I do want to mention before I leave this game is that Paris Campbell on the Colts, I think he's someone that I would actually grab on waiver wires next week, too. I'm sure we'll be talking about him in the waiver wire show between Bobby and I. But he was someone that was used in a variety of different ways. Like, he's used in the passing game, obviously. He's kind of taking on that T.Y. Hilton role because he could play all over the formation. They drafted him in the second round to be kind of that guy. He's bigger and he's faster than T.Y. Hilton. He's not the route runner that T.Y. is, but he offers some of that versatility. And they even handed him the ball 3 times this game for 27 yards. So Paris Campbell is someone to pay attention to on waiver wires.
All right, good. I'm sure you'll talk more about him this week. Now, before we get into our next game, a reminder, we are on Instagram, not me and Tags, but Fantasy Pros. Just look for us at Fantasy Pros, where you can see all of our great content over there with articles, videos, and all of that. Again, that's at Fantasy Pros on Instagram. All right, Tags, let's move on here to the Dolphins 26, Jets 18. I'm contractually obligated to discuss this game, and so I will. Ryan Fitzpatrick throws for 288 yards and 3 touchdowns, 2 of which go to Preston Williams, who I believe caught 5 passes for 72 yards and 2 touchdowns, but he left the game twice, once with a wrist injury and came back, and the second time with a knee injury. Devontae Parker also has a score. Mike Gesicki goes for 95 yards on 6 catches. But the running game, you know, unless you want to talk about the receivers, Tags, which we can, Mark Walton just 12 for 29 on the ground, plus 3 for 12 through the air. Kind of thought we might see him, you know, be a little more involved, have a little more success, because it's not the worst matchup. It's not the best matchup, not the worst matchup, especially, you know, with the Jets defense dealing with injuries and trading away Leonard Williams. Thought he might turn into somebody you can kind of start as a, you know, a flex play or something, particularly without Kenyon Drake, but I assume that's not the case going forward. So either, you know, receivers, running backs, whatever you want to talk about here, Tex.
No, the weird part was that, like, Mark Walton was someone I wrote up in the primer, and I got done with him, and I was not excited. I said that you could probably depend on, like, a 6-point floor, but that's, I can't say much more than that, because he's not getting goal line carries. The team's just not in scoring position very often, yada, yada, yada. But so many smart people were telling me that they liked Mark Walton this week. And I'm like, I'm looking at it more and more, and it's like, well, he is playing a lot of snaps, and, you know, the Jets are down linebackers. And I'm like trying to make reasons to, like, to understand why people were playing him. And he kind of had the game that I thought to begin with. And it's like one of those things where you start to question. You're like, dang, I should have just stuck with my initial prognosis of him. But Devontae Parker is someone that continually defies what people think. I'm not saying it's sexy to play any Dolphins player. I'm not. But what I will say is that Devontae Parker now has at least 55 yards and or a touchdown in 7 of 8 games. The only game that he did not do that was against the Patriots, and nobody has done anything against the Patriots. So if Preston Williams is out, especially, we're going to see Devontae Parker with like an 8-target floor. He's a guy that you can plug and play as a wide receiver 3. And it seems like no matter the matchup, because the Jets aren't even a great matchup for wide receivers, but they did very well in this game. So I would be miffed to not mention the fact that this is Mike Gesicki's first game ever as a tight end 1.
Well, I mean, look, it was revenge game. You know, Mike Gesicki was mad that Adam Gase was coaching on the other side, and that he was really the reason why he was holding him down. So he had to bring his A game going on here. Yeah, it's not the worst schedule in the world for the Dolphins passing game. They're against Indy. Buffalo's tough, but Cleveland, Philadelphia, then they get the Jets again, then the Giants, the Bengals in the fantasy playoffs. So it's certainly something where if Parker's out there, he is somebody who just continually gets it done, even though nobody really wants to talk about him. On the other side of the ball, this was the beginning of the stretch that we were waiting for the Jets offense, Tags, but only Jamison Crowder really has that good day with 9 targets, 8 catches for 83 yards and a touchdown. Le'Veon Bell, I feel like everybody's going to look at and feel disappointed, but he does have 121 total yards. He does not find the end zone. Sam Darnold, 260 yards passing, just 1 touchdown, 1 interception, which unfortunately came when they reversed the touchdown. Robbie Anderson, a huge disappointment here. 4 targets, 2 catches, 33 yards. What do you want to tell fantasy players and my cousins about the Jets?
That you could never start any of them confidently. This was a stretch in their schedule that was supposed to be like killer. And if you play in PPR formats, Le'Veon Bell, he scored 20 PPR points. You can't ask for much more than that out of a guy playing for a terrible team. With his Jets team, how a team that like legitimately the cornerbacks that the Dolphins are fielding right now, I put in the primer and I told people, I swear that I'm not making these names up. You're not going to recognize them at all. But how do you walk away without Robbie Anderson getting more than 4 targets, Demaryius Thomas 3 targets? What are you doing? Like, we know Adam Gase is a bad coach. Like, I've talked about this before. I wasn't a fan of Gase in Miami. I hated the hire for the Jets. It had nothing to do with the talent. He's just not a very good coach. And it's unfortunately affecting fantasy football a lot. And Le'Veon Bell, even though he's got a great schedule up and coming, I mean, he's like a high-end RB2 is where he is. But you can never start. The bottom line here, the biggest takeaway is that you could never, ever, ever start a Jets wide receiver confidently, ever.
I think you can start Crowder. I think that he'll be willing because he has no time to throw and because he wants to get rid of the ball. I think in PPR formats in particular, you can start Crowder. But I completely agree on Anderson, a guy who I have been holding in every league waiting for this stretch. But no longer. I mean, you know, maybe I'm sure he'll have a big game or two somewhere along the way. But no, it's a complete disaster. And frankly, the only benefit that I can take from this game is not from a fantasy perspective. It is from a Jets fan perspective, which is it's so embarrassing that the owner, I feel like, has to take notice of what is happening and hopefully clean house with the coaching staff. Because I agree with you completely. Adam Gase is not really a very good head coach. Let's move on here because I cannot talk about this game anymore. Panthers 30, Titans 20. We've got life here without Cam Newton for quite a while, perhaps the season. So this is what we're going to be looking at, and it's not all that bad. Christian McCaffrey dominant, of course, 166 total yards and 3 touchdowns. He's very good at football, as is DJ Moore, who I believe this was his first 100-yard game of the season. 10 targets, 7 catches, 101 yards. And Curtis Samuel was questionable coming in, but he does get 64 yards receiving and a score, and I believe 10 yards rushing. Anything exciting with the Panthers here, Tex? I feel like this was much more of a, yeah, this is pretty much what you'll see type of game to get the taste out from last week's devastating game against the 49ers, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, this is exactly almost what I kind of expected. I would say it's actually a better performance than expected, considering Adoree Jackson was back for the Titans. But then Malcolm Butler did get hurt in this game, had to leave. So obviously they lost him.
I believe he broke his wrist, by the way. So I think he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, he came down on a bad. So it seems like he's probably going to be out for a little bit. So I would say it was actually a really good game for this Panthers offense. Like, for whatever reason, What the Titans were doing, they were missing Jarrell Casey today. Obviously, that doesn't help up the middle of their defense. But Christian McCaffrey on his long touchdown run, like, legitimately, there was, I don't think he was touched the entire run until the end, actually, when he was kind of caught from behind by Adoree Jackson. But the touchdown pass that he caught, they did a play action, and nobody covered McCaffrey. Like, how do you forget about probably the guy that's going to be MVP?
He's not that important. He's not that important. Greg Olsen is the guy you need to be worried about. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah, no. I mean, look, it was good to see the Panthers put up this game against the defense that's not bad at all. You know, a solid overall defense, because again, you know, they laid such an egg last week off their bye against the 49ers. And so to come back here and just sort of say, no, look, you can still start DJ Moore. You can obviously still start McCaffrey, even Curtis Samuel. If it's not the worst matchup. So it's kind of a get right game for them, which was nice to see. And on the other side of the ball, I believe Derrick Henry had just 2 carries in the first half, and then finishes with 99 total yards and 2 touchdowns. So it was good to see him produce despite the negative game script. Ryan Tannehill, meanwhile, throws for 331 yards and a score. He runs for another. The receivers continue to at least be more involved than they were with Marcus Mariota. AJ Brown catches 4 passes for 81 yards. Adam Humphries, 4 catches for 65 yards. Corey Davis, 4 catches for 48 yards. Thoughts here on the Titans?
Yeah, it's another team that I don't know if you could ever stick one of these guys in your lineup confidently. Even going back to last week against Tampa Bay, it felt like a week where we should have been able to. And unfortunately, if you go back and look at that game, we just weren't. It's just going to be too hit or miss with this team. These are guys that you plug in through bye weeks. They're not consistent fantasy starters, none of them. AJ Brown and Corey Davis, I would almost say, are an even playing field right now. Corey Davis might get the slight edge just because he plays more snaps, but target wise that they're almost identical. The production is actually tended towards AJ Brown, so this is another one of those teams where I just don't want to tie myself to them if I don't have to.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know we've talked a lot about, you know, Corey Davis especially, but any of the receivers really is not so. I mean, Tannehill has played fine and has certainly boosted their stock a bit, but again, I don't think to the point where you really want to start them regularly. I still probably remain a little more confident in Derrick Henry than you do, because I know you've essentially, for the reason that you said, you have him as an obvious start, of course, I believe a strong RB2, but certainly somebody who I feel a little more confident in, just because, especially for something like this where they were behind pretty much the whole game, but he was still able to be.
He's actually had a bigger role with Tannehill, and I have Derrick Henry as number 12 running back for the rest of the season. So, I mean, I do like him.
Let's move on here to probably the most exciting game of the week. The Seahawks 40, Bucks 34, a game that ended while we were recording in overtime. Russell Wilson, I don't know. I don't have words anymore. 378 yards passing and 5 touchdowns plus 1 run for 21 yards. Good game here from Chris Carson. 16 carries, 105 yards. He does get a bulk of that on 159-yard run, which ended with a fumble, but it was a fumble out of bounds.
He fumbled twice in this game, and he lost that one too. And like, they went back to him, but at some point, it's like, Chris Carson, what you doing, man? Like, what's your problem, man? It's like to the point now where it's like, oh no, are we really gonna have to start wondering whether or not he's gonna get that workload? Because now, I mean, 18 touches. I mean, you'd have to go back to, like, I think way back in week 2. I can't remember the week it is, but you have to go back a long time to find the last time he had fewer than 18 touches in a game.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. I mean, that's part of it. They were really going to the passing game here, which is understandable given that's where you attack the Bucs, right? But I'm sorry, I did miss that. You're right, I see it now. The fact that he did lose a fumble. And again, part of it was they had Penny on the block. So you kind of felt like, you know, all right, they're going to stick with Carson. But please, just do not fumble. The one that he lost on the big run and went out of bounds, I didn't think, you know, whatever. But in the end,
Devin White, fantastic play, by the way.
Yeah, no, that was a great play. And in the end, what happened last time was, you know, the coaching staff came out. Pete Carroll said, we're going to stick with him. We have no problems. My guess is they will here too. And again, he's been running better than Penny, regardless. I mean, he's running better this year. So I think they'll stick with him. All the receivers just go crazy. Tyler Lockett sees 18 targets, 13 catches, 152 yards, and 2 touchdowns. DK Metcalf, you know, I sold him short with the 70 yards. He winds up with 123 yards. And Jacob Hollister, who you mentioned, 6 targets, 4 catches, 37 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Other than Carson, who we just discussed, anything on the, you know, passing attack, considering, of course, Josh Gordon is coming on board?
I just want to say I would rather have Jacob Hollister than Darren Fells moving forward. But outside of that, I think there's a lot of people that are gonna like give me crap for saying that DK Metcalf was a loser today, and I want to be clear that I said that even though he had a good game, that the reason he's a loser is because of the addition of Josh Gordon. We don't see Russell Wilson throw the ball 43 times very often, so it's like, look at the number 3 wide receiver on the team, David Moore. He got 4 targets. That's basically where Metcalf probably would have been with Josh Gordon on the roster. So I mean, again, DK, big game. We expected it. Like, I had him ranked as my, I think, number 21 wide receiver this week, so I liked him quite a bit. That's like low-end wide receiver 2 territory. But Russell Wilson, just so good. I loved games like this, and this was one of those games where I said on the podcast that if this over-under had been set at 58 points, I probably still would have said over, because, like, I went through and I looked at the quarterbacks that Seattle had played. I looked at the quarterbacks that the Bucs had played, and it had been such bad competition. I'm like, these two quarterbacks should kind of go bananas in this game. And they both kind of did. Russell Wilson is just, he is the MVP right now. Like I said, Christian McCaffrey is a guy that should receive consideration for anybody. Like, as far as, like, non-quarterback players, he should be, like, number one in that conversation. But Russell Wilson is just so dang good.
Yeah, he's playing out of his mind. And it's just fun to watch. I mean, he's incredibly accurate. Just everything he's doing is great. And again, you mentioned it, though. Jameis Winston, he doesn't play poorly. I mean, he does lose a fumble because he has to turn the ball over at least once in every single game. 44 attempts. He does complete 29 of them for 335 yards and 2 touchdowns. He almost had a third one. Mike Evans was down at the 1 yard line. And Evans, meanwhile, although he looked gimpy the entire game, looked like maybe he was battling through an ankle injury or something. 16 targets, 12 catches, 180 yards, and a touchdown. Chris Godwin, 7 catches, but just 61 yards. Meanwhile, on the ground, Ronald Jones dominates the carries right from the get-go. 18 for 67. Not that impressive of a number or anything like that, but he does get the touchdown. Meanwhile, Peyton Barber, just 4 carries for 15 yards. So takeaways here from the Bucs.
This is what we were looking for out of the bye week, and now I'm really upset because Ronald Jones gets 18 carries, and it's like, okay, this is what we've been waiting for. Like, 20 carries overall. He had 2 receptions, 20 touches in a game against Seattle. It wasn't a good matchup, but we'll take it. That's I was expecting that out of the bye, because I was like, all right, they've had 2 weeks, now it's time for a change. They finally go to Ronald Jones, and it's like, now you want to feel confident playing him. And you just know what's going to happen next week. You just know it's going to be Peyton Barber getting like 12 touches. Ronald Jones is going to have like 5, and you're going to be like, to hell with this backfield.
And you know what the problem, by the way, is, of course, that they play Arizona. So everybody is going to start Ronald, you know, everybody's going to start Ronald Jones next week. So when that happens, it's going to be particularly painful.
Yeah, that's when it's going to be Barber week. But I want to say, I think Mike Evans might have a little LeBron James in him in terms of, like, you know, the gamesmanship where he's hurting, but he's really not. Like LeBron James, when he lays down on the court and he, like, it's almost like he's dead, and you're like, oh my God, did he tear his ACL? And then, like, legit 2 minutes later in the game, he's dunking on people. So that could be a Mike Evans type thing. But I mean, either way, this was a good matchup for Tampa Bay's offense. And so it's good to see Mike Evans continually, like, going off. I think this is like, oh, I was looking at his air yards. Like, the dude, like, in terms of opportunity, what he's been getting, I expected this to be a big Chris Godwin week, and I was wrong. I thought it was going to be Godwin over Evans this week, but man, with the way Mike Evans, like, is getting targeted down the field, I don't know how he doesn't end up with over 100 yards every single game.
No, I agree. Every play is just tons of air yards, and I agree with you. I had Godwin ranked over Evans as well. I thought it would be a better game for him, but yeah, Evans is really coming on now, and it's great to see. Let's move on to the Raiders 31, Lions 24. I mean, the Raiders offense continues to look uber competent here, especially Josh Jacobs. 28 carries for 120 yards plus two touchdowns. Derek Carr, meanwhile, throws for 289 yards and two touchdowns, one to Hunter Renfrow. Jalen Richard, oddly enough, is your leading receiver with three catches for 56 yards, but he kind of spread the ball around a lot. Darren Waller, just two catches, but 52 yards, and Tyrell Williams, three catches for 48 yards. Thoughts here on the Oakland side of the ball?
Yeah, I haven't been able to look at the snap counts of this game, but Josh Jacobs is someone that, like, he was trending in the right direction, and it's obviously good to see him get 28 carries, but the downside is that he only had two targets, didn't catch a single pass, and that was kind of the problem earlier in the year, where it's like, if game script goes south on him, are they going to use him in the pass game as much as they, you know, maybe should, because he is a true three-down back. But getting in the end zone twice is never a bad thing. The Lions have been terrible against running backs all year long, so this was one where Josh Jacobs should have gone off, and he did, which is good to see. Darren Waller, really disappointing, though. Like, two targets for 52 yards. I mean, the 52 yards on two catches is solid, but two targets, like, this is a bad time of the year for him to, like, start losing some targets.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take anything, you know, away from it too much. You know, again, this is going to sound silly, but two catches for 52 yards. I get the targets weren't there, but two catches for 52 yards, like, you'll pretty much take that from a tight end at this point. You know, you're looking for much more from Waller, and I don't think it's necessarily indicative of what we'll see going forward. I mean, again, the leading receiver had 56 yards in this game, and again, it was a running back. So, you know, I think it was just sort of, for whatever it was, it's the way the game kind of unfolded. So I'm not overly concerned about Waller. On the other side of the ball, again, we talked about the receivers already, but let's talk about the running game here. I mean, you know, Ty Johnson, you know, now you've got Trey Carson on IR, so he's out for the season. Ty Johnson gets the most carries, 9 for just 29 yards. He also has 3 catches for 7 yards. JD McKissick, 4 carries and 32 yards, plus he has 3 catches for 40 yards and the touchdown. I mean, are you owning anybody in the Lions backfield?
Probably just because of bye week issues. As I mentioned, there's 6 teams on bye next week, and that it's like, it's dire, man, because I write an article that comes out every Saturday morning about waiver wire stashes, like players that you can grab off the waiver wire that are available in at least 60% of leagues. And I'm not kidding. The best running back I found was Ronald Jones, but outside of him, Gus Edwards was like the next best running back I could find for next week. So yeah, I would not be quick to be dropping Ty Johnson, knowing that, like, what is available in most leagues on waiver wires. Like, again, it depends on a league, like, per league basis, because every league is different. But I wouldn't let him go. But once bye weeks are done, absolutely let him go.
How about McKissick though? Here, I mean, he's the one who has he doesn't see more carries, but he has the bigger game.
It was more about efficiency with McKissick though, because like 7 touches is what he winds up with. He's been a guy that's been getting like in between like 4 and 7 touches per week, and you need some crazy efficiency on that. Like, have we been starting Duke Johnson every week with him getting like 5 to 8 touches? No, and Duke Johnson's a better running back, so JD McKissick is like just like an emergency streaming option.
All right, let's move on here to the Broncos 24, Browns 19, the unofficial end to the Browns season. Brandon Allen, 12 of 20 for 193 yards. He does throw 2 touchdown passes, 1 to Cortland Sutton, which was nice to see, 5 catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown, and 1 to Noah Fant, 3 catches, 115 yards, including the long 75-yard touchdown. On the ground, Phillip Lindsay, I mean, only 9 carries. I kind of expected them just to run this entire game, but only 9 carries for Lindsay. He does go for 92 yards and the touchdown. Royce Freeman, very quiet in this game. Thoughts here on how the Broncos offense looked with Brandon Allen under center?
This was one of the games that I chose not to watch too much of, so I'll be going back to watch this one during the week. I did see parts of it. I saw Noah Fant's catch where he kind of just like nobody could tackle him. He looked like a monster. It was almost like a Gronk type thing where it's like, I'm not sitting here comparing Noah Fant to Rob Gronkowski, but he bounced off multiple tacklers. I think it was like 3 guys in that touchdown catch where he looked fantastic. Cortland Sutton bailed out Brandon Allen. And this game is exactly what I thought it would have been for Cortland Sutton, except he did catch the touchdown, because like, otherwise, if he doesn't catch that ball, he has 4 catches for, you know, like sub 50 yards, and he winds up outside the top 36 wide receivers. I was worried about Cortland Sutton this week. I had him at like wide receiver 32. I was one of the lower analysts on him, which I'm fine with because that touchdown was legit. Like, he deserved it. Like, that was straight up like Randy Moss type touchdown. But yeah, Brandon Allen, from what I did see, I will say that I was not too impressed. I know that the final stat line doesn't look bad at all, but I expected more plays. Like, again, this is one of those games I need to go back and watch, because to see Phillip Lindsay with 9 carries, Royce Freeman with 5, what was the time of possession in this game? It had to be like the Browns had to dominate time of possession, and they still lost the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did. You know, the Broncos had you know, they obviously had the 75-yard touchdown to Noah Fant. So that was a very quick drive. And the one with Sutton, it was just kind of boom, 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 and then the touchdown pass. Really, Cleveland had the ball for a lot of the game. I don't have the exact breakdown, but I was watching it sort of, you know, as I was prepping for the podcast. And they had some long drives. They just could not finish them off. They just kept settling for field goals, four of them, I believe. But speaking of them, just not a great game. I mean, Baker Mayfield, again, just one touchdown pass, 273 yards. Odell Beckham gets 6 targets, 5 catches for 87 yards. Jarvis Landry sees 14 targets, 6 catches for 51 yards. He's the one who does find the end zone. Not a great game for Nick Chubb here, especially with Kareem Hunt knocking on the door. 20 for 65 on the ground, plus he has 4 catches for 26 yards. You didn't watch the game tags, but generally speaking, looking at the score, what do you think?
I mean, I would have expected a bad game out of Baker Mayfield here. To see him wind up with 273-1, it's actually better than I thought it would have been against Denver. Denver's been really tough on quarterbacks. I want to say they've been like the third best team in the league behind only the Patriots and the 49ers. So it's a brutal matchup. It was on the road. Odell Beckham was going to be tied up with Chris Harris Jr. for a majority of the day. I actually had Jarvis Landry ranked higher than Odell Beckham this week. So I really wasn't shocked to see the results of this game. Beckham did have a long 39-yard reception that, again, I did see that one. I saw parts of this game, basically, that I would just turn it on and then flip back and forth between a different game on the one TV. But it was not a game I felt like I wanted to watch, to be honest with you. Philip Lindsay's touchdown run, I saw that. So I've seen more of this game than I think that I thought, but I did see that touchdown run, and I know Royce Freeman's really good, but Philip Lindsay's so good. Like, he's got such burst to him, and like, he is a smaller back, but he's proven that he can handle a workload. I guess it's hard to take away touches from Royce Freeman because he's been good as well, but Philip Lindsay deserves 15 plus touches a game.
Yeah, I mean, this was a bad game for Freeman. He did almost nothing at all in the entire game. But again, this is just kind of what it's going to be. I don't think this moves really the needle for us on where we have Lindsay or Freeman.
So does it, though, knowing that, like, so combined, they saw one target. So Lindsay saw no targets, Freeman one. That's concerning to me in terms of, like, I know that they only threw the ball 20 times. They only had 20 rushing attempts. So, like, there was just not many. 43 plays, it seems like, as a whole. That's not good. But it's not an exciting offense. Like,
I think there's a couple of things. I think number one, first of all, we have no idea if Brandon Allen's going to be the quarterback for the rest of the year, right? I mean,
well, that's right. They might go to Locke.
Correct. After they come back from the bye, we really don't know necessarily what it's going to look like. And second, it was just a weird game, man. They jumped out to a lead. I don't really know. And if I were the Cleveland defense, I think that's what I would be expecting. So they may have been guarding for it again. Again, I was watching it, but not that closely, thinking like, that's what I expected as a fantasy analyst, that there were going to be probably a lot of dump offs and keep going with that, especially Freeman, who gets, you know, 5 targets a game anyway. So it was a weird game. I'm not willing to draw too many conclusions from it, but I'm also not willing to basically say, forget about, you know, Freeman takes a step down and Lindsay takes a big step up. I think I have them probably about where I had them coming into the week. Let's move on to our final game here. Chargers 26, Packers 11. This is what the Chargers do just when you count them out. There they are to play okay. They rely heavily on their run game here. Melvin Gordon looks better, 20 for 80. I mean, not that great, but he does find the end zone twice. Meanwhile, Austin Eckler, 12 carries for 70 yards. Both get involved in the passing game a little bit. Gordon has 3 catches for 29 yards. Eckler, 4 catches for 23 yards. Mike Williams was the guy who you were worried about, I believe, last week. He does only have 4 targets here, but 3 catches for 111 yards. Hunter Henry continues to do well with 7 for 84. And another disappointing game for Keenan Allen. 3 catches on 4 targets for 40 yards. What do you think here, Tags, on the Los Angeles side of the ball?
I mean, this was the new offense, right? This was a change. And I am personally happy to see them run the ball as much as they did. They even got Justin Jackson in there for a couple carries. But the running backs combined for 34 carries in this game. It was so smart. Like, that's what you have to do. And you don't go toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers. It's not what you do. Rodgers didn't look good in this game. Like, it seemed like he was holding onto the ball for a long time, couldn't find receivers open. The Chargers had to do a good job in the secondary because Davante Adams was back. But again, Rodgers just had trouble all game long. He just couldn't find anybody. But Melvin Gordon, I thought, looked really good. Gordon, he has had burst, and I've been telling people, Melvin Gordon is still the same running back, guys. It has nothing to do with his skill level. It was all about the team and what they were doing. They were averaging just 15 carries per game over the last month with him in the lineup. Austin Eckler had averaged 1.9 yards per carry in that same time. So Eckler had struggled too. It had nothing to do with, oh, we need to go back to Austin Eckler as the workhorse that fantasy players wanted. Melvin Gordon is the same running back. It's good to see him get back on track. Mike Williams is someone I kind of changed my tune on as the week went on, because you're able to do more research and find out things. And to look at the air yards that he's been getting, and air yards is like a very it's a stat that I'm learning to like more and more because it shows the actual opportunity and that you could buy low. Knowing that there's no other wide receiver that could take targets from in this offense, knowing that Keenan Allen is dealing with that hamstring injury that he's had, that the running back shouldn't be getting as many targets as they've been getting, Mike Williams should like continue to get opportunity, and it's only a matter of time before he starts finding the end zone. Only 4 targets today, which is definitely concerning, but the air yards, again, were there.
And on the other side of the ball, as you sort of mentioned, everything was bad. Rodgers threw for just 161 yards and a touchdown to Jamal Williams. No receiver has more than 44 yards. Aaron Jones, 8 for 30. You know, obviously Devontae Adams, he does see 11 targets, just 7 catches, 41 yards. Just a bad day at the office or anything to be concerned about?
I mean, it's concerning because it kind of went back to like the Matt LaFleur early Packers offense that was like very boring. It all goes back to Rodgers, man. Didn't look good. Didn't want to take very many risks today. And I think we have to tip our hat to the Chargers defense for some of that. But there's no excuse to run the ball 10 times with Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. Williams, I mean, he looked good on the few times he caught the ball out of the backfield. He was breaking tackles like left and right. He's looked really good in a limited time. I think he's better in that timeshare role. But to know that Aaron Jones touched the ball 9 times, a guy that's been like legitimately one of the best playmakers in the NFL, there's no excuse for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of willing to write this off just because, again, you hope it's not Devontae Adams comes back and suddenly they morph into what they look like early. It's certainly possible. But it's something where I'm just like, this was so out of character. Rodgers was so bad and he'd been playing so well that I'm kind of just willing to maybe say, well, you know, maybe the cross-country trip, maybe they just looked past it a little bit or something like that. But whatever it is, I will note maybe for next week that Jamal Williams is a prime candidate for What's Your Problem, Man, because I think you're way too low on him. But we'll leave that for next week because that is going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to our sponsor, Roman. Remember, you can deal with your erectile dysfunction simply and discreetly by going to GetRoman.com/FantasyPros. And thanks to FanDuel, where you can get $20 in FanDuel credits by going to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. Enjoy the rest of your Week 9 football, everyone. Tags and Bobby will be back to talk you through the waiver wire. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. But I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble. Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.